Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. After 22 years, it is over. The GOAT is hanging up his cleats. Not the meh kind, the Tom Brady kind, of course. The longtime New England Patriots quarterback announced this morning that he is officially retiring from football after 22 years in the league. Also, some serious will he, won't he, the last couple of days after rumors of his retirement were first reported on Sunday. Brady, of course, spent 20 of his football years right here in Foxborough, Massachusetts. He helped redefine greatness and the Patriots franchise as the leader of what some argue is the greatest sports dynasty of all time. So 6 Super Bowl wins later, we don't have time to revisit all of the memories. But because today is that day, let's take a listen back to how it all started. 2001, second-year quarterback Tom Brady comes in for an injured Drew Bledsoe. Brady and the team never look back, eventually capturing the team's first ever NFL title, not to mention 3 of the next 4.
Tom Brady, the second-year quarterback from the University of Michigan, who threw only 3 passes in his rookie year last year, 1 for 3, a 6-yard completion, and this is his first duty of 2001.
Now with no timeouts, I think that the Patriots with this field position, you have to just run the clock out. You have to play for overtime now. I don't think you want to force anything here. You don't want to do anything stupid.
Brady's in the shotgun, and he's going to throw it. Nothing stupid. Gets it up. J.R. Redmond pass complete. It's out to the 21.
Now I would, I don't agree with what the Patriots are doing right here.
There's Brady again. Up the middle, caught, and it's Troy Brown, and he gets out of bounds, and they might be in Vinatieri's range with 21 seconds left.
This is amazing. This is something, and I'll admit that as a coach and as an analyst, I don't think they should have done, but they had the guts. They have a young quarterback, and they did it. They were backed up. They were inside their own 20. They had no timeouts left, and they're calling these plays, and not only calling these plays, but making these plays.
7 seconds. They got Vinatieri in range.
I'll tell you, what Tom Brady just did gives me goosebumps. Unbelievable. That's the way you should win a Super Bowl.
The New England Patriots claim their second Super Bowl championship in 3 years. And the New England Patriots are on their way to solidifying their team as an NFL dynasty. In the 60s, you think of Green Bay. In the 70s, the Steelers. In the 80s, the San Francisco 49ers. The Cowboys in the 90s. And the New England Patriots will be the first dynasty of the 21st century.
Fans of New England, this is your third Super Bowl in 4 years.
Say whatever you want, but look at these diamonds on these fingers. I mean, that speaks for itself. I mean, that shuts a lot of people up.
Which of the rings do you like the best? What's your favorite ring?
My favorite ring. We always said, and I said always, the next one. The next one's the best.
Of course, this time there will be no next one. And how do you feel about that? What went through your mind when you heard Tom Brady was retiring? For sure. Call us. Join the conversation. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now, Jim McBride, Patriots reporter for the Boston Globe. Jim, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN and sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Welcome back, Howard.
Hey, Tiziana, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. Howard, I'll start with you. You know one of my favorite questions is, how big is this? So, variation of that, now that his career is officially over, how good was Tom Brady?
Well, it's everything that you're hearing. It's everything that you're hearing, and it's not an exaggeration. I think especially from a New England standpoint, depending on your generation, depending on your time, let's not forget what this New England Patriots franchise was until this dynasty started. I cannot think of another franchise that has so completely gone from yesterday to today. And that obviously goes back before Tom Brady. That goes to when Robert Kraft and when Bill Parcells took over. From that day forward to now, and especially after 2001, they've completely rewritten the entire history of this franchise. And it really is unprecedented. And it starts pretty much with the guy with the ball. It's Tom Brady.
So, Jim, what do you find yourself thinking today?
You know, it's a whole generation of people, of football fans who have grown up. You know, my own children who are in their 20s don't know anything about the NFL without Tom Brady. So there's a whole, you know, I'm down at the Senior Bowl today where the college all-star game, and none of these guys have ever, they weren't even born when Tom started his career. So I think he started off at the top by calling him the GOAT, and that's the most appropriate nickname. And I know that gets thrown around a lot for a lot of different things nowadays, but really it's befitting of Tom. He's the greatest of all time. He was the coolest customer of all time. And, you know, it's kind of a sad day to see him go. I mean, it was sad 2 years ago when he left New England. But it's that was sad for New England. Now it's sad for the NFL.
Jim, I was going to say, Jim, you didn't school your children in the ways of Hugh Millen?
No, they don't know anything about Tommy Hodson. They do know about Steve Grogan because he was my hero back in the day. But they're so spoiled with the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins and of course the Patriots. They don't know what it is to lose.
So, Howard, you know, Jim was just talking about GOAT for our non-sports listeners, greatest of all time. The acronym spells GOAT. I believe I remember you questioning calling him the GOAT, maybe not the GOAT of football, but the GOAT, 2 years ago when he left New England. You think there are some athletes in other sports who might deserve that title?
Well, absolutely. Well, I think that we all like to live in the moment. But if you're talking about championships, how do you... You can't do this, Tiziana. You just can't do it. Look at Bill Russell. Bill Russell won 11 championships in 13 years. Joe DiMaggio was in the World Series, what, 9 times? I mean, there's a lot of great, great players out there who have done unbelievable things. Now, if we're talking about football and we're talking about the quarterback position, there's no question who the best player is, and it's Tom Brady. There's no question who's the most accomplished. I mean, the man spent 45% of his career in the Super Bowl.
Oh my God!
I mean, you can't quantify that. To me, it was always Joe Montana. When Jim was talking about the coolest customer out there, to me, it was Montana. He was the gold standard. What Brady has done, even in defeat, when you think about two of his losses, think about his greatest loss. The Patriots are trying to go undefeated. His last throw of the season was, you know, trying to, well, it was getting the last drive was a touchdown. Was trying to get was Randy Moss in the end zone. They would have won that game had the defense come through. And his last game of his career is what? Is they come back from a 27-3 deficit. So when you think about what he's done as a player at that position, there's nobody better. And he deserves everything, all the accolades that he's getting right now, because none of us have seen anything like it in terms of the actual accomplishment.
So, Jim, in your years of reporting, have you had to find ways to either explain or convince non-football fans of the importance of somebody in a sport demonstrating as consistently the kind of level of excellence and longevity of a Tom Brady? Is there a way to get our heads around that if you're not a football person?
You know, coincidentally enough, I'm in Mobile, Alabama, which is the hometown of Hank Aaron, who I think also deserves that acronym of the GOAT. Another guy who just, you know, defined consistency and greatness and class. So, you know, if you're not a sports fan, if you're not a football fan, it might be hard to quantify it, but I think he's, you know, those two guys are probably the two greatest of all times in their respective sports. So, I enjoyed my front row seat watching the Tom show for as many years as I got to, but it's hard to explain it to someone who hasn't seen him do it consistently. And I think that another mark of his greatness is that he was always the hardest worker in the team, despite the fact that he was a multiple MVP and Super Bowl winner. Everyone that came in that locker room recognized him as the hardest worker, and every one of them said, if this guy's working as, you know, harder than anyone, how can I take a day off? How can I take a play off? How can I take a rep off? And that really rippled through that entire locker room and the entire organization. So, like Howard said, just transformative from a franchise that was a consistent also-ran to a consistent perennial champion.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What does it mean to you for somebody to be the greatest of all time? How do you decide when someone's the GOAT? And have you decided that that's Tom Brady? What are you thinking about today? And if you don't understand all the hype, call us and tell us why. Again, 800-423-8255. Howard, I've wanted for a while to dive into this leadership question. Jim just talking there about the importance of his work ethic, his excellence, which sort of cascaded down through the Patriots organization. We know lots of conversation, especially after Tom Brady left for the Buccaneers. Was it really Belichick? Was it really Brady who created that transformation? Was it a bit of both? I wonder, does he stand up to examination as a leader outside the organization?
Sure. I think that there's a lot to be said for this, and I know that the way these things end, it always has sort of a soap opera romance to it as to whose fault it was, who was better, who was the more influential, et cetera, et cetera. And there's always that. But to me, the thing that I get most about Brady, he wasn't always the most popular guy in the league in terms of how he went about his business, because let's not forget that in a quarterback league, and Jim, you know this better than I do, Tom Brady took plenty of pay cuts to keep that team together. He played under market for a lot of years, and it's not necessarily something that the Players Association would have advocated. It's not something that other players would have advocated. But, you know, there was something to be said for him to do what it took to always be in winning positions. And maybe that obviously had a lot to do with how things ended, you know, with New England, because he did do a lot of team stuff that in a game where people say everybody's selfish and everybody's out for their own dollar, he was not playing for the highest salary at all times. And that's a big deal. If he had been, I have to be the highest paid guy, in the highest paid quarterback in the league at all times, maybe they don't keep that team together.
I'm going to grab a phone call here, 800-423-8255. Jim is on the line in Marblehead. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. A great show, as always. I just
Thanks.
Wanted to sort of add something a little bit different. I mean, Tom and the Patriots and now the Tampa Bay, well-deserved accolades that will go on forever. But what I wanted to offer is that there's another element to this that brought many of us joy over the years, particularly in very turbulent times, whether that be the times of elections or the times of COVID. Having something, such a wonderful distraction, was priceless. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful. You know, outside the, you know, extraordinary athleticism of Tom and focus and determination, which is an inspiration itself, he provided many of us with something to sort of, you know, change the story
for
a few hours on a Sunday afternoon. So that, for that, I'm greatly appreciative.
Jim in Marblehead, thanks so much. Jim McBride, let me turn to you on that. You know, the gift of watching somebody be magnificent at something and letting you escape into that magnificence for a little while.
Yeah, and he did it so often. And, you know, such a flair for the dramatic. I think about 67 fourth quarter or overtime game-winning drives. I mean, that's just amazing. I mean, he kept you on the edge of your seat. And as far as being a galvanizing figure, I can think no more of, you know, better example than their first Super Bowl, which was in the aftermath of 9/11. And, you know, they had that fantastic halftime show where they honored the victims of the attacks. And, you know, the country was kind of in a down, you know, and we were morose for a while after that. And that Super Bowl, those bunch of underdogs came back, and I think whether you liked or didn't like the Patriots at that time, maybe excluding Jets fans, you were rooting for the Patriots to win that game because of the storyline. And just, it was, you know, it was time for something uplifting, and it came around at the perfect time. So,
and Jim, remember that, and I don't think it's changed since then. Remember pre-9/11, pre-Patriots, when your two teams came out of the runway in the Super Bowl, they introduced the players individually. The Patriots in that Super Bowl came out as a team. They came out unified the way they were trying to make the analogy of the country being unified. And I don't think that teams have gone back. I think from now, ever since then, when teams come out of the Super Bowl tunnel, they all come out as a group now.
So I want to pick up on that thread. And Howard, you and Jim, you too, you guys are reminding us of the Patriots meeting a moment for our souls, a moment for our spirit. 21 years ago, I mean, so much has happened in the last couple of years, it's almost hard to transport ourselves back there. I want to transport us forward now. Howard, I know you are a Marvel watcher. You know, the Spider-Man line, with great power comes great responsibility. You look at a Devin McCourty of the New England Patriots meeting the moment around social justice issues and inequality. Brady has not used that platform in those ways. Should he be expected to, Howard?
Well, Brady's not black. I mean, that's the hardest thing to face in this country when we talk about these subjects, is most of the time when we're talking about social justice, it doesn't really pertain to white male athletes. There are very few of them that you would look out there and say, yeah, they were the guy. I mean, there have been some supportive guys like Chris Long and Jason Kelsey, and there have been other guys like that, and there have been guys who have been supportive. And obviously with the women, with the WNBA, you've seen the women athletes do this more across racial lines. But generally speaking, people have treated social justice as a black male athlete problem or a black problem. So I don't really blame Tom Brady for that. What I do find fascinating about it, however, is that here is a guy in very, very divisive times who had a Make America Great hat in his locker and, you know, had his beliefs and had his feelings. And somehow he still sort of survived the cauldron. He didn't become an Aaron Rodgers. He didn't become a Cole Beasley. He didn't become one of the guys who was painted as divisive. He dealt with that little controversy for a bit, and it didn't overshadow everything, and he found a way. Maybe he was protected by his greatness and celebrity or whatever, but I remember him doing that interview. Jim, you were there, so, you know, I'm a positive person, and I really, you know, don't like to think about these things. And then he still maintained the respect of all of his teammates and escaped. And in a time when it's very, very difficult to escape the sort of politically identifying political beliefs.
Yeah, just to pick up Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, not vaccinated, now part of kind of the darling of the anti-vaccination movement here in COVID. Jim, I'm going to invite you to pick up on that thread. And also, you know, we can't leave out that he was polarizing for people who loved to hate the Patriots, including people who felt like he cheated because of Deflategate. We joke in our house, yeah, Spygate too, which were scandals for the New England Patriots deflating footballs and spying on team plays. We joke in our house he also brought the ideal gas law to teenagers all across the country. But, you know, polarizing in some of those ways too, Jim.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Giselle kind of gave him that escape hatch when it came to the Make America Great hat.
His wife, Giselle Bundchen, just so people know. Go ahead.
Yeah, she basically said to him, like, no more politics talks. Like, you know, you're not allowed to talk about that anymore. And he joked and he said, look, my wife doesn't want me to talk about it. I'm going to get in trouble. And at the time, everyone laughed, but it worked because no one ever brought it up again. And he never had to face those questions again. So chalk one up for Giselle on that one.
And that's big.
I think that with and I think with Deflategate, you know, I think that ends up being a blip on his history. I don't think that, you know, people have done worse in the NFL and gotten less suspensions. I mean, you remember that was probably the worst thing for anti-Patriots fans. Is, you know, they saw that and they wanted Tom to get punished. But if you remember that season that he served the 4-game suspension, he came back with a vengeance. And they won the Super Bowl. And he was the MVP of that Super Bowl. Julian Edelman was. But he was he was a man possessed, and he went on a scorched earth tour after that. So he used those negative thoughts as fuel. And he always played with that chip on that shoulder. He talked about that from the beginning of his pro career, being a sixth round pick. He never lost that chip. And, you know, that kind of helped him be consistently great because he never took anything for granted.
All right, let's do a little bit of a lightning round here as we wrap up. Howard Bryant, so he's gone. He's out of the mix. He's been the football story. What's the next football story you're watching for?
The next football story I'm watching for? I think I'm going to keep it in the 617. I want to see what Bill Belichick and company does next. I want to see how good Mac Jones is going to be. I want to see how many more years Bill Belichick wants to do this. I want to see how much we know what matters to Tom Brady. We know that it was the everybody doubted me and I was always me. But I wonder how Bill Belichick feels about his rebuild. It needed to split, but I want to see what the other half does on this too.
Mac Jones being a rookie quarterback for the Patriots this year. Jim, same question to you in this lightning round. What's the next football story you're looking for?
Yeah, I agree with Howard on that, but I'm also going to be looking at Josh McDaniels and see if his career path kind of follows Bill's in that he gets a second chance at a head coaching job and he does it much differently and has much more success. And I think I personally believe that he will. I think he learned a lot from that short stint when he was the Broncos coach where, you know, he kind of went in and kind of acted like Bill. And he didn't have the cachet to do that at that point in his life. And I think he learned a lot from that. And I think Bill learned a lot from his first coaching stint in Cleveland, came back and, you know, now is the greatest coach in the history of the game. And I think Josh is going to be a really successful guy in Las Vegas. So I'm going to be looking for that.
Josh McDaniels being a part of the coaching staff at the Patriots, now going to the head coach role at the Rams. All right. Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN and sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jim McBride, Patriots reporter for the Boston Globe. Appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So we're listening to sound from Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam earlier today. It is the start of the Lunar New Year in the year of the tiger. Well, the year of water and the tiger, to be exact. Throughout the Commonwealth, our Chinese, Vietnamese, and Korean neighbors, among others, are celebrating the first day of the Lunar New Year with food, family, and flowers. And that includes in Quincy, which has the highest percentage of Asian American residents of cities and towns in Massachusetts. Joining us now to celebrate and share hopes for 2022, State Representative Taki Chan of Norfolk County's 2nd District, which includes parts of Quincy. Representative Chan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Sunny Fellow, Gong Hei Fa Choi, Sun Hei Ging Hong.
Thank you. And maybe you can translate that for us.
I wish you all a happy new year, wealth and happiness and health.
And are those the areas of focus for the Lunar New Year as we look ahead to a new year, Representative Chan?
Yes, the Lunar New Year represents a time of bringing a new air, I suppose, the way to put it, a chance for new opportunities and wishing all of us good fortune, good health and wealth.
How are you celebrating today?
Very little, unfortunately. COVID has made it difficult for family gatherings. However, on Saturday, we did a global Zoom call with relatives both locally and overseas. So while I admit COVID is very tough on all of us, a small silver lining is that we've now discovered the value of 3 or 4 hours of video chatting of our relatives everywhere.
What did that mean to you to have that time? I mean, there's so much we can't do to celebrate with family right now.
Well, I think the most important thing is to just catch up. To have an opportunity to find out what's going on in people's lives, share some stories. And with things like WhatsApp and other messaging devices, I get pictures of people's celebration in their homes. And for example, I got a video of Hong Kong's fireworks this year.
What are the traditional ways of celebrating the Lunar New Year and how long does it last?
The Lunar New Year really goes on for an evening into the next day, and the entire Lunar New Year period is approximately 14 days, depending on which family you ask, but 14 days before you hang the lantern festival to close the new year. It is really about greeting families. As a child, my father used to take me to people that are seniors, and I would have to greet each of them, receive my lucky money, some candies, and the tangerines and nectarines and oranges, symbolizing wealth and gold. So it is very much a family activity on respecting our elders, but also a time to get together to celebrate family and prosperity for the next year.
And are there any celebrations happening across Quincy?
Well, Quincy was to have an in-person celebration on Sunday. Unfortunately, it is going to a virtual event later this month, I believe the 22nd, with QATV and online partners. You're going to do a virtual event.
How hard is that?
It's hard. There was a lot of anticipation to do an in-person event. It's at North Quincy High School, the student population is a participant in planning and putting the event together. And given the tough year we've had in the Asian community in 2021, the year of the Ox, it was a great opportunity for us to get together. But regretfully, we're pivoting yet again to something in response to the times we live in.
Help us, the rest of the community, be in solidarity. Tell us about that tough year.
Well, 2021 was especially difficult, not just because of COVID, but it came full bloom racial issues associated with the Asian community, especially East Asians, and being blamed for COVID-19, rising tensions out there, and enormous violence throughout the United States on Asian communities, whether it be physical violence, workplace harassment, or just verbal confrontations and racial slurs on the street. So, we warned this in 2020 March that this was on its way, and we built to a crescendo in 2021.
Have you been hearing from Asian and Asian American constituents about acts of hate in your community?
I've heard incidents regarding verbal abuse, saying things when cars are driving by when you're walking. We've heard incidents regarding people who are hesitant providing services to Asian Americans in their retail. And also some stuff that you didn't think about, for example, that actually happened that could have been racial. For example, in 2020, when I was getting my nomination papers photocopied at Kinko's, I was denied service, even though they've been doing the service for me for essentially five terms. So it was one of those moments you think about whether there's something there or maybe there isn't. But given the circumstances of time, we have more benefit of the second thought about whether what's really going on behind people's minds.
So how do our neighbors show up? What can we do?
Well, I ask people to support Asian restaurants and retailers, whether it be online or in person. I ask people to please be better educated about Asian Americans, Chinese, Koreans, Japanese. Our history is a big part of America. We have over 150 years of history, and I think that's largely neglected. Most important, don't ignore us. Part of institutional racism is not just actively excluding people. It's actively ignoring people, and therefore by excluding people. And our voices have equal value as everybody else in the workplace, as well as in the rest of society. And listening to us is very important.
So I understand that the Lunar New Year marks a new year in the Chinese zodiac, which means combining one of the 12 animals with one of the five elements. So we've got the tiger and we've got water. And I know it's a time for looking forward. The tiger is associated with power and strength. What are you hoping for looking forward now in 2022?
Well, the year of tiger, some zodiac horoscopes are talking about rebuilding relationships, being a little more cautious for your money, but also willing to take some risk going forward with your life. And I'm hoping this will be a year of better understanding and a year of a chance people can make some new bold choices despite the circumstances we are in. And obviously we're all asking for positive change, not just with COVID, but in the society we live in.
Tacky Chan is the state representative for Norfolk's 2nd District, which includes parts of Quincy, Massachusetts. Happy New Year to you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and I wish you all health and happiness.
Do you remember where you were when you heard the news 2 years ago today?
Developing news in Boston, the city now home to the 8th U.S. case of coronavirus. And tonight, officials across the country are investigating other potential cases, including in New York City. Worldwide, nearly 14,000 people have the coronavirus. That's 2,500 more cases from just yesterday.
It was 2 years ago. It was a lifetime ago. 4 months later, here we are. We are dealing with a much different story. 1.4 million cases in Massachusetts. 1.4 million over the last 2 years. Roughly 378 million worldwide. Back then, the words Omicron, Delta were not everyday words, and the idea of shutting down the state or the world really still seemed unimaginable. Well, it is Tuesday, and we started Ask the Docs a month later, March of 2020. We were doing it every day of the week then, and we still, 2 years later, are doing it every Tuesday to help us navigate the pandemic. We're still here today, and we continue to answer your questions. So what do you need to know? Both how are you reflecting over the last 2 years, and what questions are coming up for you now that maybe you didn't have 2 years ago, maybe you didn't have 2 weeks ago, especially with potentially a vaccine for kids under five on the horizon. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet questions at Radio Boston. Joining us this week, Dr. Simone Wilds, an infectious disease expert at South Shore Health, and a new voice to ask the doctors, Bill Hanage, an epidemiologist and co-director of the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Dr. Wilds, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Dr. Hanage, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. So, Dr. Wilds, take us back to this day, 2 years ago. What were you thinking was going to happen?
Tiziana, I remember exactly where I was in the hospital when I heard about the first case. To be honest, my first thought was, you know, it's probably going to be mild, you know, similar to the flu. I never would imagine that things would change so quickly. I didn't anticipate so many deaths. I didn't anticipate working so hard. I just didn't anticipate so many patients, so many unknowns, just really learning information as fast as I could put my hands on it. Really, for me, a life-changing experience and continues until this day.
How about for you, Bill Hanage?
Well, I know exactly where I was. I was eating a taco. And I think my wife read out a local news report and I kind of went, oh, well, I guess that's not totally unexpected. I think that being an epidemiologist, I had a better sense of exactly where we were going because I wasn't surprised that it was here. I wasn't sure when it was going to start. And in fact, that first case, it doesn't look like it left many descendants in Massachusetts. We had to wait a while for it to be really introduced. But yeah, I know exactly where I was. It's one of those memories that will stay with me the rest of my life.
Did you think it was going to be what it's been? We've been living in it for 2 years now. It's hard for me to remember if there was anyone out there, Professor Hanage, saying this is going to be huge. This is 1918 is coming.
There were some people, but I think the difficult thing to remember is that it's very difficult to get a read on something like this early on because the data are just not all in. And so some people who did turn out to be right were not necessarily right because they had all the data. It's just, you know, a stopped clock. It's right twice a day. And since then, we've always been scrambling to try and keep on top of the data as much as we can. I think that at that point, it was pretty evident to most of us, if only because of the fact that we had seen what happened in Wuhan. And given what was happening in Wuhan, we had reason to think that something like that might happen somewhere else. But of course, there's a whole load of stuff from variants on, which we could not foresee at that time.
Let's go to the phones here. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Debbie on the line in Lowell. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi. I take care of two elderly people who have many health conditions, congestive heart failure, kidney failure, Alzheimer's, just a bunch of things, diabetes. So they've both been immunized and boosted. And we basically keep them in their homes right now because it's just we're so afraid of them getting sick. But the question is, I don't know the name of the medication. I apologize. The one that was recently approved by the FDA that if you have mild symptoms, you can take it. Now, everything I've looked up says that with their medications they take for high blood pressure and everything and seizures and all these fun things, that there's no way for them to take it. I didn't know if maybe you know something about that or not, or if maybe you could suggest other things that we could do besides a very small bubble to keep them safe. They do usually have in-home PT, OT, nursing, et cetera, that we could possibly do to keep them safe until this is maybe gone.
So I appreciate the question, Debbie. And Dr. Wilds, you know, we have not had a lot of calls on Ask the Doctors over the years about the treatment methods. We talk tons about vaccines and prevention. Here's a treatment set of questions, as well as how do we expand the world as much as possible for two very vulnerable older adults?
Debbie, that's a great question. And one of the things that we have learned dealing with COVID is that we have gleaned very significant information about treatment options. You know, I remember when we were just really experimenting with the different drugs, a lot of different clinical trials. And when we started, you know, we were using remdesivir, which got approved, but now we have moved beyond that. And of course, vaccines have become a really, really important accomplishment. But now we have oral therapies. And I think what you're referring to, there are two new drugs that have been approved under EUA, molnupiravir, which is tablets that you can take. And for as soon as you're diagnosed with COVID, you get treated with that. Or there's another treatment option that's called Paxlovid. And that one in particular, you really have to make sure that your provider looks at all your medications because it causes a lot of drug-to-drug interactions. And so it's really important that your provider takes the time to look at what medications like your parents are on so that they don't end up with significant problems. So I think the key thing would be to make sure that you talk with your healthcare provider in case they get COVID, and they will look at the options that are available to them. So, you know, that's something that I would strongly recommend. And also, you know, we have monoclonal antibodies, which we give to people who are high risk for getting severe illness. So again, not yet another treatment option, which we have learned having gone through the pandemic.
Professor Hanage, before I go back to the phones, Dr. Riles just made that reference to EUA, Emergency Use Authorization, which we talked a lot about in the early days of vaccines. It's not full approval by the FDA. It's a medicine that's approved under emergency circumstances for use. I bring it up to you for two reasons. One, the Moderna vaccine has just moved from emergency use authorization to full approval by the FDA. And two, we expect potentially as early as today for Pfizer to seek emergency use authorization for a vaccine for kids under the ages five and under, under five. So I want to ask you how important that designation is. And does it matter, you know, that Moderna crossed that hurdle? And should it matter to parents that this Pfizer vaccine, if it receives emergency use authorization, isn't quite past that hurdle yet?
Well, it's first thing to say is that it's fantastic that Moderna has managed to go past that, across the hurdle, and is now fully approved. This is these are really extraordinary vaccines. They're really great. With respect to the very specific question that was asked, I do want to point out that they do a hugely great job if people have been vaccinated and boosted, including among older age groups. I really want to emphasize that people who are older should be seeking to get boosted. Parents, once we have emergency use authorization for Pfizer, should recognize that this is a step on the road to being fully approved. It is at the moment being approved because of the specific emergency in which we are still within. I don't know if you've noticed, but we are living in a country where we are seeing more than 2,000 deaths every day at the moment on average. And that's partially as a result of transmission occurring within the community, including among children, even though children themselves are really, really unlikely to have severe disease. But getting those kids vaccinated is a way to provide them with some protection. And as a parent myself, I'd be very confident giving such a vaccine to my child.
We have a follow-up question on this, 800-423-8255. Ashley's on the line in Salem. Ashley, go ahead.
Hi. I was in the process last night of planning a drive from Salem, Massachusetts to Sarasota, Florida to see my 92-year-old grandmother who's never met my six-month-old and hasn't seen my four-year-old in 2 years when I saw the headline come through. And we stopped in our tracks and said, wait, maybe we could fly in April after our children could get vaccinated, including my six-month-old. Do I have reason to be as optimistic that they could be protected enough by mid-April with a vaccine?
Oh, Ashley, I'm a little choked up about your six-month-old not having met the 92-year-old grandparent and how excited you are. Dr. Wilds, Ashley's question.
Ashley, I think you can feel very reassured that by April you will be able to take that trip. I think it's wonderful for families to get together, and it's even better when we can get everyone vaccinated. So I think you have a lot of hope that by April, they should be vaccinated and be able to go visit and have a fun time with your family there in Sarasota. So rest assured, everything will be okay.
800-423-8255. We have Jim on the line in Framingham. Jim, go ahead.
Hi, I have a couple of quick questions. One is the pneumonia shots. Nobody's talking about that. There was a doctor reported in the New York Times from New Hampshire, I believe, a gentleman in his 60s or 70s, and he's still practicing, and he noticed that there was a pneumonia aspect of this COVID-19, and nobody's talking about getting pneumonia shots as a preventive, whether you should get the pneumonia shots if you have COVID-19 or before 19. That's my first question. The other one is, what if you have a regular cold? That's a virus. And if you test positive taking the test, how do you know it's not from the cold virus?
All right. Okay, Jim, so two questions there. Dr. Wildes, I'll give you the first part, which is the relationship between suffering from COVID-19 and pneumonia. And the larger conversation, you know, whenever we talk about vaccines right now, we talk about COVID vaccines. There are shingles vaccines, flu vaccines, pneumonia shots. So pick up on that, Dr. Wildes.
Jim, it's really a great question, because I do understand that there are a lot of people right now, the focus is on, you know, getting the COVID vaccine. But there are many other routine vaccines that we want to encourage everyone to get. You know, it's the flu season, so I want to encourage you to get the flu vaccine. But the pneumonia vaccine is also very important. And that is a discussion that your healthcare provider should be having with you. And if that hasn't happened, you can call and say, did I get my pneumonia shot? Am I due to get it? I think you might have to ask those questions, because right now, a lot of focus is on COVID, but we're trying to get back to doing all the routine care that we missed because of COVID. I mean, it really has changed our lives, and we're trying to get back to all the care that we give for patients, you know, the diabetes, the hypertension, getting back to getting all the tests and all the vaccines so that we can keep everyone healthy while we try to manage COVID.
And Professor Hanisch, to the second part of the question, you know, we have so many questions around testing, and testing has certainly been a complicated subject for us over the last couple of months. You know, worries that if you have something else, as I understand it, a cold is basically a type of coronavirus, worries that you might test positive on a rapid antigen test and have something other than COVID. Can you address that worry, please?
Sure. I want to start, though, Jim, by saying, you know, pneumonia is and vaccines against pneumonia are a subject very close to my heart. You can probably tell from my voice, I didn't grow up in Massachusetts, but the first reason I came here was in order to study the impact of those vaccines. And it was, and I ended up staying. when it comes to the testing piece, the coronaviruses which cause the, you know, the mild innocuous colds that we've been used to, they're really quite different. And so the rapid antigen tests are quite specific. The ones which are in use and which have been approved are specific, not perfectly specific, but there's a very, very low chance that you're going to get a false positive. Similarly, it's, you know, equally important to make sure that they are sensitive, so you're unlikely to get a false negative. This is one of the reasons, by the way, that I'm a big fan of rapid tests, because they can be, if you do turn out to be positive, it's a really useful piece of information that you can take on to protect others. If they are negative and you're in what you might call a high consequence situation, like you're visiting an elderly relative, it's probably still a good idea to take other steps like wearing a mask or doing it outdoors and stuff like that. Certainly at a point when you know there's a lot of virus in the community. Hopefully, those numbers are going to come down and we'll be able to be a little bit more confident.
And when they do, Professor Hanisch, as those numbers are coming down, do you foresee and would you advocate for loosening of some of the restrictions and practices that we've been keeping close during this Omicron spread?
Well, I think we've unfortunately had a really, we've had real problems with having sensible conversations around pandemic management. When you have a lot of virus in the community, you need to do something to stop it. Yeah, that's just fundamental. At a point later on, though, we have to consider balancing the things which really matter to us and how we can do those things without producing a big problem for healthcare. That's always the issue here. We just heard about just how difficult and horrible the last few weeks have been in healthcare as a result of the Omicron surge. At a point when that eases, then we can start considering doing things which are a little bit more relaxed, always with the proviso that we might need to put things back in place if a new variant comes along. But I want to emphasize, we're a few weeks out from that, because even though cases are down, deaths in Massachusetts are still quite high, and hospitalizations, I think, have turned the corner, but they're not likely to be something which we can take for granted for quite a while yet.
1-800-423-8255. Bill in Middleton. Bill, what's your question?
Hi. My daughter turns 5 in late March, and she's actually just getting over a bout of COVID. She's about 10 days out from her diagnosis. I'm curious if it would make sense to wait until she turns 5 and get that dosage of vaccine, or get the under 5 approved vaccine as soon as that's available.
And again, folks, just to clarify, the news today is that Pfizer is anticipated to, as early as possibly today, seek emergency authorization use for the vaccine for kids under 5. There will then be a process, and we don't yet know for sure if and when the FDA will do that emergency use authorization. I just want to clarify where we are in the moment right now. So, Dr. Wildes, your answer to Bill's question.
Bill, I would say, given that your daughter just had COVID, and I hope she's doing much better, and she had very mild symptoms, I think given that we're in February and she's going to be 5 in March, I probably would just wait to give her her vaccine at that point, because she will have enough antibodies that should last her, you know, we'd say at least 90 days. So she should be covered. If it was a different timeline, meaning she wasn't going to be 5 so quickly, I would say would probably give her the less than 5 vaccine. But I think right now you could wait until she gets to 5 to give her the vaccine for the 5 to 11.
And Professor Hanage, briefly, what is the realistic expectation for whether and when the FDA will give emergency use authorization to the vaccine for kids under 5?
Unfortunately, I can tell you a lot about the expected dynamics and events for the virus, but it's a lot harder to predict the expected behavior of people, including the FDA. So I would want to hold off on that. It could be a little while, so I'm not going to make strong predictions there.
So are there any predictions, lightning round here, we have just less than a minute left, any predictions you do want to make, Professor Hanage?
Well, I think that if you look at the numbers we've got at the moment, we can see that they've been coming down pretty robustly. They've gone down considerably below those we've seen in some European countries. And I suspect that they're going to continue to remain low. However, the problem in healthcare is going to remain, because most of that big peak was in younger people, and now older folks are getting infected. Once we're through that, hopefully we're going to be in a position where we're going to be able to take a deep breath. But, you know, only fools with short memories make strong promises during a pandemic.
All right. And on that note, we'll end. That was William Hanage, epidemiologist and co-director of the Center for Communicable Diseases Dynamics at Harvard's T.H. Chan School, and Dr. Simone Wildes, infectious disease expert at South Shore Health. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show. You've been listening to Radio Boston.